So am I still waiting?
Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
It's another edition of Review Away. I'm John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting. Wei, we have a huge packed edition of Review Away today. Not only are we reviewing Halloween Havoc 2000, but we're also going to bring you an exclusive interview with Lance Storm, who competed on this show.
I love this, John. So this is becoming like a regular segment on this.
We've gone segment. 3 weeks in a row, so I'm pretty happy. And Lance, to his credit, went back and even watched his match on this card.
Wow.
And gave his comments. But before we get to Halloween Havoc, we teased this a few weeks ago, and I wanted to convey this to the listeners. The October 18th, 1999 edition of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter has been found, courtesy of Dan the Mouth Lavransky. And I just wanted to read Meltzer's quick thoughts on the Heroes of Wrestling show at the time. I won't obviously read the whole thing, but here is how it starts. It was the worst pay-per-view of all time. It set new standards for bad wrestling. It made former worst match of the year winners like Hogan versus Warrior look like great athletic contests. Perhaps the only positive note when seeing so many former stars who knew exactly what to do, being physically unable to do it, makes you marvel at just how good men like Ric Flair, Dos Caras, Gran Hamada, and in their day, people like Nick Bockwinkel were when they could still put out decent matches as they hit the half-century mark. There is almost nothing good to write about the October 10th Heroes of Wrestling debut show from Casino Magic in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, before a mainly papered crowd of 2,300 largely non-wrestling fans. Dutch Mantel did a good job on color commentary, but the play-by-play man, Randy Rosenbloom, a Los Angeles sportscaster with no knowledge of wrestling, was so bad it ranked among the worst announced pay-per-view spectacles ever. Tully Blanchard cut a good promo and appeared in good shape, but his knees are shot, and he was unable to do a thing with Stan Lane. Two Cold Scorpio and Julio Fantastico had the best match on the show, and at best, it was indie-level work of two guys who didn't work well at all together, but did modern moves. Now, also on that card was the legendary Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov versus Bushwhackers match, where Dave Meltzer rated it amazing at the time. When you consider all the matches Meltzer's ranked, he gave this negative 459.4 stars.
Can you see that? Can I see?
He actually says it. And then in brackets, read what he wrote in brackets after that ranking.
Minus 459.4 stars in brackets. Absolute zero. This is the worst match I've ever rated in my life.
So Dave Meltzer, not a fan of that match. Though, when he was on Live Audio Wrestling 2 weeks ago, I asked him about the Heroes of Wrestling match with Volkov and Sheik against the Bushwhackers, and he did confirm that Jenna Maraska versus Charmel was worse. So in 10 years, he has seen a worse match than that one. So the bar's been set very high for Jenna Maraska and Charmel. But anyway, that was our look back at Heroes of Wrestling. Today we're looking at WCW Halloween Havoc, the final Halloween Havoc show away from Las Vegas, Nevada at the MGM Grand. It was a very depressing time in WCW, 5 months before they would go out of business. So let's get into the review.
Yes. It's sponsored by EA Sports.
Yes, their new video game.
WCW Backstage Assault.
Which was actually kind of par for the course of what put WCW into a state of chaos. It was Backstage Assault by many people who were nowhere to be found on this show. It started off with Pamela Paulshock back with fans in outside the building yelling, "Who's here to see Goldberg?" to a very tepid response. And that brings us to the start. We have Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Stevie Ray on commentary, Way. Did you remember Stevie Ray?
I do remember Stevie Ray, yes, of course. I do not remember much of his work as a commentator. And watching this show, that became understandable.
Well, Stevie Ray really had his working shoes on tonight because, boy, did he work overtime trying to get over new talent. Our first match was for the Tag Team Championships with Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak defending against the Boogie Knights, which were Disco Inferno and the neo-Nazi Alex Wright, Berlin, and the team of Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman. And coming out, Mark Madden made a comparison of Mark Jindrak to a younger version of Arn Anderson, and Stevie Ray replied, "Are you comparing Jindrak to Arn Anderson?" Thankfully, Tony Schiavone, who was the quarterback, came in and said,
"You cannot compare these guys to the Steiners, the Anderson brothers, Warriors.
These are your fucking tag team champions. And they are not in the league of performers that are no longer even with you. Tag team acts that are retired.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they are...
Jesus Christ.
They are heels, and he is a heel commentator. That is a pretty outlandish statement.
Tony Schiavone was a babyface commentator.
No, no, no. Madden was a heel commentator.
He was a heel
Madden
commentator.
Madden was saying this about the Natural Born Thrillers, who were heels at the time.
We then were joined by Conan on commentary, who, in case the point wasn't enforced, stated that Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare need to get refunds from their wrestling school because their training sucked. And they were never as good as Harlem Heat.
Yes. Way to put over your own school.
During this match, Way, I can run through the spots here, but it all led to your horrible tag team champion, Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak, defeating Sean O'Hare getting a Shauntan bomb onto Disco Inferno for the win. Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman overworked everyone in this match, I thought, and they had no place at WCW. They should have been in the Fed by this point.
I actually thought this was a pretty good match and probably,
match on the show?
Best match on the show. Very fast-paced, as you'd expect from all these guys. Berlin, Disco Inferno, and especially Kidman and Rey Mysterio all worked very well. O'Hare and Jindrak at this point, though they were champions, they still looked absolutely very green compared to the rest. What bothered me most about this match, if three people weren't already enough at the commentary booth, you throw Conan in there too.
Didn't give a shit.
It was just a clusterfuck.
It was just constantly calling Disco Inferno a strawberry.
Oh my God.
He mentioned that Sean O'Hare is wearing a pair of brown bowling shoes throughout this whole match.
They were focusing more on comedy than the in-ring action, which is disappointing. Especially during the finish, there were too many voices screaming, just, oh, that's it, oh, he's out, one over the top of the other. Just guys who really should be professionals, but aren't.
How many times during this pay-per-view did we get Tony, what's happening? Tony, who is that? Tony, what's going on? God damn, did Stevie Ray suck. After the match, the Natural Born Thrillers attacked Conan, and I popped huge from my living room because that meant the end of Conan. I was wrong. He would be back. From there, during this Natural Born Thrillers run-in, Reno, who was part of the group, was in the ring, and suddenly AWOL, the deceased AWOL, ran in, and we have a hardcore title match.
Suddenly.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what was happening. Stevie Ray asked Savani if they were out here for the next match, and then they had to look at their notes and like, oh, there is a match. They're here for their next match, yes.
During this match, which was Shivani mentioned that once again, Halloween Havoc's brought to you by Backstage Assault, available on PlayStation 1.
Remember
to,
that?
To enhance how old this tape is. They brawled backstage. The company lost in excess of $65 million in this year, and they added to that total by a stupid throwaway hardcore match involving laptops being thrown around backstage, where AWOL threw one, Reno ducked, and it hit a wall. Mark Madden got in the clever line, "I always said the internet would destroy wrestling." And if you were saying, ha-ha, give yourself 3 hours of Mark Madden.
Shivani also said, "I don't think that one was online," referring to the laptop.
Horrible. Roll of the dice by Reno onto a broken table. Reno keeps the hardcore championship.
Yeah, the WCW hardcore division really was just only one small part of everything they were trying to do to catch up to the WWE at the time. I mean, by this time they were incorporating a Titantron, moving the ringside announce table, to ringside, and finally a hardcore title with these meaningless plunder matches that don't mean anything. Who remembers any of these matches, whether it be WWF or WCW, 10 years later? What I did find funny was them throwing the prop computers, which were very obviously props because there were no connections to them. There were no cables.
Wireless. Boy.
This was we're talking a huge CRT monitor with the desktop image still on the monitor. Despite there being any cord attached to it. And AWOL was able to lift this thing like it was just a piece of cardboard and toss it around more than once without it shattering. I thought that was hilarious.
What I hated, one of the many things I hated about WCW this time, was the cute little names they came up with people. Oh, AWOL. General Rection.
Corporal Cage.
Oh, my God. Backstage, Shane Douglas is with the Natural Born Thrillers, and he's thanking them for just taking out Conan in the last match. Unfortunately, there was a graphic in the bottom left-hand corner that said earlier today.
I didn't. Well, to me, this was the funniest moment of the event. You forgot to mention, John, that at the end of that hardcore match, we had Palumbo and Stasiak run in.
And then they go backstage, and then they had to do another entrance because they're in the next fucking match.
Well, here's the funniest thing, because Palumbo and Stasiak had run in to rescue Reno. They were all in their wrestling gear. Before they could even make it back to the backstage, they cut to a vignette with them in their street clothes.
I didn't even pick up that they were in that vignette.
A minute into the vignette, they finally realized, oh shit.
And they Because we had to wait. We had to have Shane Douglas thanking them.
They put the earlier today little lower third there. But the only problem is, Shane Douglas is congratulating O'Hare and Jindrak on their victory over Conan earlier tonight. So if you rewind the tape, this conversation could have only have happened between the time that Jindrak and O'Hare walked to the back and before Reno walked out to the ring.
Maybe they had a quick shower, changed.
Logically, there was no way this conversation could have happened, and it just goes to show how poorly planned this whole production was.
Tony Schiavone then alerted us that tonight Bill Goldberg's winning streak is on the line. Now, I'm pretty good with dates. I know that Bill Goldberg lost at Starrcade 1998. His streak was over at Starrcade 1998. Well, you cannot start his streak again, which is what they apparently did.
They tried to do that.
They then cut to Chronic, who were apparently signing waivers for the match tonight. So we were going to get Chronic against Bill Goldberg, and I was about to slip my wrists, knowing that that was forthcoming tonight.
Yeah.
Then we get to the match you mentioned, Sean Stasiak and Chuck Palumbo, out for the second time tonight against Lash LaRue, a.k.a. Corporal Cajun, and Lieutenant Loco,
yes.
Chavo Guerrero. And my God, Chavo Guerrero looked 20 years younger in this match.
Yes, Schiavone informs us right as the participants enter. Fans, I'm told this match was just booked.
Stevie Ray, though, one-upped that line because as he was describing Stasiak and Palumbo, who were known as the perfect event, he said, "These two are on the same page, but they're on a different bookmark."
Oh,
what
beautiful.
The fuck does that mean? They're on the same page, but they're on a different bookmark.
Oh,
shut the fuck up, Stevie Ray. I gave out the Scott Putski Award to the perfect event, Stasiak and Palumbo. They were just gross. And then Stevie, during the match, "These two are more like the less than perfect event." This guy was growing on me by this match.
This guy was the perfect commentator, I think, for the end of the WCW era.
He summed it up perfectly. Take us to this one. It was Lieutenant Loco and Corporal Cajun getting the win here.
I actually thought this was a pretty decent match. Chavo looked excellent here, and to an extent, I thought Palumbo looked pretty good, too. They all followed their cues. I mean, you have to have thought that these four men weren't given much notice about this match before they had to go out and do it. So, taking that into account, I thought they did pretty well. The finish was all right, a super kick out of nowhere, and the perfect event win.
Immediate cut to backstage, and this would be the theme throughout the rest of the show. The second the match ended, cut. Yeah. I thought TNA was bad. WCW, this is where clearly Keith Mitchell and crew at TNA learned from.
We're talking like cutting the
instantly,
off,
like mid-sentence. Take out any impact that this win had. And what do we cut to? Conan with a trainer backstage, and he's injured from the attack earlier. He asks Ray and Kidman to take his place in the match tonight, and the babyfaces say, "Fuck off. We just worked. We're not doing another match." Shane Douglas's music hits. Perfect Event is still in the ring. That's how fast all of this was. They were still in the ring, leaving. Our next match is Shane Douglas teaming with Tori Wilson, who was dressed up as Wonder Woman, and Mark Madden announced that he used to masturbate to Wonder Woman, taking on the team of Conan and Tigress. Tigress, former Nitro Girl. Tigress showed up, and Conan did not. So it was 1-on-2, Tigress taking on Shane Douglas and Tori Wilson. Conan was wearing a Vince Carter Team USA jersey, which is one thing I noted. And he made the run in about 3 minutes in. So the babyface basically left the woman alone to fight his battle. Madden was being beyond annoying by this point.
Yeah.
He said, "Tori Wilson's a great boxer. I've seen her wrestle, but I want to see her box." Isn't that funny, Way? Isn't that hilarious?
Don't you see the smile on my face?
No.
This was a really, really weird match. Like, it made me feel weird watching it. Shane Douglas came out immediately in his promo, calls Tigress a bitch. Then he proceeds to stomp on her. Like, stomping. I mean, like, this match would not have made it onto TSN in the 90s.
Male on female violence way. That's what the audience
wanted.
It
was weird. Like you said, Konnan was injured, leaving most of the work to Tigress in this match.
Do you recall Tigress's big spot she had in this match? What they called it? Where she gave a Bronco Buster to Tori Wilson, who had Charles Robinson on top of her, and it was a Bronco Buster, but they called it the face full of stuff.
Snuff.
I thought it was the face full of stuff.
No, face full of snuff.
Face full of snuff.
Her finisher was a Snuff Buster.
Jesus. Who the fuck thinks of this?
Mark Madden. Tori Wilson at one point hits Shane Douglas's finisher on Konnan, which I did not buy for a second. This frail 120-pound woman lifting a 200-plus-pound man and knocking him unconscious with any wrestling move is outrageous. Right as the match ends, it cuts once again to a backstage interview with no breathing room.
Exactly. Right to Gene Okerlund, who's with David Flair, because we had a big promo from David Flair discussing his upcoming DNA match with Buff Bagwell, and he had brought on two doctors, lab technicians, to secure a sample of Buff Bagwell's blood to determine if Buff was the father of Stacy Keibler's unborn child. I'm not making up any of this.
You're going to be able to find out if Buff did the unthinkable with Stacy Keibler. But first, who are these two gentlemen?
Never mind them right now, Gene. It's pretty obvious that gigolo piece of crap, Buff Bagwell's the father. And when I beat him tonight, I'll have the blood to prove it. That's why I brought these two guys right here. So tomorrow night, on Monday Nitro, I'll have the DNA evidence to show the whole world what a liar and what a piece of garbage he is.
This was the match. Buff Bagwell versus David Flair in a DNA match with the question, did Bagwell sleep with Stacy Keibler? Flair came out with vials and syringes on a pro wrestling show in 2000. Vials and syringes made its way into a WCW angle. Tony Schiavone had a comment that would not be appreciated until a full year later when he said, David Flair has been livid since 9/11 when he was left at the altar.
Yes, because 9/11, 1990,
September 11th, 2000, yes. When they had an edition of Nitro. Throughout the match, Madden decided to yell, he's doing all of Rick's spots! I wanted to punch Mark Madden in the fucking face.
So much.
This guy, it was like, I'm going to get myself over, I'm going to be cute, I'm going to get across lines that people think are funny, and to fuck with all the talent. Because if I was a talent at this part, I would be beyond pissed. This was just disrespectful that he had zero intention of getting any of these guys over. It was all about Mark Madden, this whole show. And I liked Mark Madden's commentary back in this time period. And watching back, I don't know what I was doing at 16 that made me enjoy his commentary, because he was horrible.
Well, you were...
Stevie Ray was dumb. Mark Madden was just disrespectful.
I got to agree with you.
No one cared at this time, Wade. No one cared. If you took 20 people that just didn't care, run a wrestling show, this is the pay-per-view they'd produce.
I actually felt bad for Tony Giovanni and many parts during this show. But he gave a great line in this match as well. Lex Luger runs into this match.
Yeah.
Lex Luger, who's supposed to be a friend of Buff Bagwell, turns on Buff Bagwell.
Shocking.
And Tony Schiavone. How many times is Luger going to turn on people here in WCW?
I wrote that down too. Bagwell was hit in the head with the worst chair shot and did the most obvious blade job that took him a full 2 minutes to do under the ring. And is suddenly a bloody mess. It was David Flair that took the chair shot and then did the crappy blade job. Bagwell was bleeding from the mouth, and therefore, after the attack, Bagwell got the win here, and then David was still able to secure a sample of Bagwell's blood. So the match was pointless. David Flair lost and still got the blood sample.
He got the blood, yes. And then another match with the Natural Born Thrillers. Another one.
Yeah, you forgot that Scott Steiner cut a promo backstage about having a large penis. To there, we go to the next match on the evening's card. A boxing match, a kickboxing match. I think this left something to be desired if you are a connoisseur of K1. Ernest Miller against Mike Sanders.
This would be the third time Palumbo and Stasiak walked down that ramp in within 1 hour.
This was the first hour. Sanders cut a promo saying, I'll be dead in your ass.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that means. We had 3 2-minute rounds. Why were they 2-minute rounds? We're in the state of Nevada, for fuck's sake. Could we not have some legitimacy here?
I don't know.
Early knockdown by Miller. And this was just, it was 6 minutes of Ernest Miller destroying Mike Sanders. After the first round, Mark Madden gave the first round to Sanders. So clearly the spirit of Cecil Peoples was in Mark Madden this night. The fight ended. All 3 rounds were over. And then Shane Douglas ran out, had a chain link where he hit Miller, who was out cold. Oh, sorry. And he gets up at 9 to end the third round. Then after the fight, Ernest Miller gets out of the ring and attacks Shane Douglas and is counted out. There was a count out after the match had ended.
I don't think the match had ended. I think the count out was how this kickboxing match ended.
But the 2 minutes were up.
Well, they don't go to a judge's decision.
So
obviously.
What? You just who leaves the ring first can get counted out?
There's a count out. A count out ends a kickboxing match.
I'm just glad this was over and we were going to get an Ernest Miller Shane Douglas feud.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying this was all building to the next month's Mayhem pay-per-view, which we will never review.
This did not work. A worked kickboxing match is not something anybody wants to see. The audience, first of all, don't know the rules of it. They don't know how many rounds there are. In fact, they booed when they realized that they were going to a third round. The ring card girl received the biggest pop in this match. And by the way, John, do you know this match was for the commissionership of WCW?
Yeah, this all led to Mike Sanders becoming the commissioner by countout in a kickboxing match.
Which was a
why that should have any bearing on who is the commissioner is beyond me. By this logic in 2000, I guess Andy Hoog would have just passed away in 2000. But I mean, if that's the criteria to be WCW commissioner, then Ray Cepho should have been in the running.
Ernesto Hoos should have been.
Yeah, Ernesto Hoos should have been the commissioner WCW of WCW. We go to a chronic promo who says even if Bill Goldberg has a concussion and can't work the main event, they still get paid even if they don't work. Fantastic. Mike Awesome against Vampiro was up next, and they announced that Nitro would be taking place tomorrow night in Irvine, California at the Brent Event Center, which is where Bound for Glory took place last Sunday.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Mike Awesome was going to be putting up his Monday Nitro title shot, which he had tomorrow night. Why he would do that, I don't know. You have a title shot. Why would you risk it?
Who cares?
At least that I could fathom. During this match, this was the match where Vampiro suffered a serious concussion based on the final spot. And he might have even been concussed earlier in the match because he was groggy throughout this match, wandering around outside the ring during spots. And it led to Mike Awesome hitting an awesome bomb off the top rope. Tony Schiavone yells, he killed him! And they cut to the back.
Yeah. Vampiro came out here, and at first I was thinking, hey, this guy's got a good look, a cool entrance, cool music. Then Vampiro grabbed the mic, and he proceeded to cut the most generic amateur wrestling promo that I'd ever heard. I'm coming here to kick your ass, Mike Awesome. Besides that, not only am I going to bring it, you think you're such a tough guy? If I kick your ass here tonight, I'm going to get that title shot, big guy.
I'm coming here to kick your ass, Mike Awesome, but besides that, not only am I going to bring it, you think you're such a tough guy? Tomorrow night is scheduled. You got a championship match because you're just the big guy in the block right now. But how about tonight? If I beat you here in Las Vegas, why don't you put that title shot on the line? And if I kick your ass here tonight, I get that title shot, big guy.
Big guy. It was like a non-wrestling fan's impersonation of what a stereotypical...
I'm going to kick your ass.
...pro wrestler would have been sound like.
Vampiro took a lot of punishment in this match, legitimately. And he talks about this match, about Mike Awesome not being careful in this match at all.
Well, Mike Awesome, as they battled to the crowd, the turning point in this match for me was when a fan started to attack Mike Awesome.
Yeah, I forgot to note that, yeah.
From this point on, Awesome was pissed off.
Fan headbutted Awesome.
Yeah,
he headbutted him.
He got a few punches in, and you could tell Awesome after this was in absolutely no mood to work at all. He just walked down the ring to Vampiro, would not take any of Vampiro's offense, would just kind of lay around.
Almost killed Vampiro on the finish. His head just bounced off the apron.
They botched a bunch of moves, and the awesome bomb from the top rope was sick looking, but it ended up being a legitimate injury to Vampiro, and it ended
up out for months after this. I don't think he ever worked for WCW.
This was
his
last match before the buyout, so that was it.
Backstage, Gene Okerlund is with General Rection. Stevie Ray comments after that. Tony Schiavone is running down a point, and Stevie Ray responds, "I gotta agree with you, Mike." We then show a MasterCard ticket winner who looked like a young Ed Ferrara. And that brings us to Lance Storm and Jim Duggan defending the Canadian title against General Rection, a.k.a. Bill DeMotte. This match, Lance looking very good, Jim Duggan not looking very good. So much happened in this match. We had a handicap match for the title. We had Major Guns held prisoner by Lance and Duggan. We had a run-in. We had a foreign object. And this all had to be done in 10 minutes.
Yes. I will say, though, the crowd was very hot for this angle. I think Lance Storm especially drew tremendous heel heat. Hugh Morris looked very good as well, except for the moonsault finish, which was way off mark. But the crowd was really behind this whole angle.
Well, at this point, I think we should go to the Lance Storm interview. He was less than favorable about this match, Way. Not a big fan of it. So let's hear from Lance right now with his thoughts on this match.
Today we're looking back at the final WCW Halloween Havoc event from October of 2000, and joining us today, a special guest who was on that card, Lance Storm. Lance, thanks a lot for doing this for us.
No problem. My pleasure.
So we're looking at Halloween Havoc 2000, Lance, and on that card it was yourself and Jim Duggan defending the US/Canadian title against Bill DeMotte, who at the time was going by General Rection. Now I'm curious if you got a chance to go back and actually see this match from 9 years ago.
I watched it last night, and boy, what a horrendously horrible match.
Well, there was a lot going on in this match because it was you had the handicap deal. It was a title match. We had the whole Major Guns angle going on as well for the finish, an Elix Skipper run-in, and all of this in the course of about 10 minutes. So I guess kind of a lot to kind of process, and I guess that was kind of par for the course for WCW at the time.
Yeah, and you forgot about the ref bump.
I was going to bring that up because he sold for you like you were Superman in that match.
Yeah, and the thing that, again, just the epitome of the horrible booking back then, it's like, again, you know, you had the 2-on-1 handicap, you had the prisoner of war manager against her will, Tylene, you had the Elix Skipper run in, you had the foreign object, the ref bump, all this to accomplish a babyface getting a win.
And for you to win the title back 8 days later.
Yeah, and again, also too, you've had all that accomplished to degrade the title and have somebody, maybe babyface, win it by pinning the non-champion.
Yeah, that was another thing thrown in there. And, I mean, the feud between you and Bill DeMotte, you guys actually did three straight pay-per-views at the time, and this was right in the middle. This was the second pay-per-view. Chat with us just a bit about working with Bill DeMotte, because at this point, this was pretty much the big push he got in his career, and obviously had put his body through quite a lot up to this period. What kind of was the health of Bill DeMotte at this stage of his career?
He was actually in really bad shape. He didn't tell me right away. Because he was trying to hide it, because WCW had the policy back then where if you were off injured for, I forget how many days it was, they cut your pay in half. So he was trying to work through every injury he could, so he didn't want to tell anybody what kind of shape he was in, but finally the trainer basically made him tell me, so then we could start trying to take care of him better. But yeah, he was not in the greatest of shape. His knees were shot, he had a lot of head issues, I think, at the time with a few concussions, so he was not in the greatest of shape, so once he clued me in, we could start taking better care of him. But yeah, it was a tough time, and then we had to really try to work around stuff like that and take care of him. Although one thing I did want to mention from the match, when I watched it back, I remember having a huge issue with Ricky Santana was our agent at the time, and he was the one that decided to do the Tennessee tiptoe spot for the ref bump. And I'm just sitting there going, we're doing the Tennessee tiptoe on pay-per-view for a ref bump. Could this get lower end? And it was just driving me crazy.
Well, what was Ricky's thought process behind it? Was it just it was a mistake on Scott Armstrong's part during the match. But if that's how it was planned, I mean, what was kind of Ricky's philosophy?
I'm assuming he worked with Memphis in Memphis Way of Once Upon a Time and thought that was a great spot, or just wanted to amuse himself or whatever. But just the the ref doing drop downs and you know me cracking heads with Bill and then stumbling back and cracking heads with the ref. It's like, to me, it just seemed like it's a comedy spot, and be way too complicated just to bump the ref in a match that shouldn't have had a ref bump to begin with.
Well, I guess Ricky does end up kind of getting his revenge. I ended up watching this whole show for this review, and later on they do an angle where Scott Steiner beats up Ricky Santana backstage because he's not going on last on the pay-per-view.
Perfect. I didn't even remember that. I only save my matches from WCW, so I can only watch the one match. And
oh, Lance,
be honest,
you don't want to go through this whole pay-per-view, believe me. But I did want to bring up some other things as well. Watching this whole card, I'm just curious your thoughts on Mark Madden's commentary, because throughout this show, he drove me insane on this show, because it seemed that Mark Madden just had a number of lines where it was designed for Mark Madden and Mark Madden alone. And by, you know, an hour into this show, it really, to me, got distracting. And I don't know if, you know, if you were going back and watching the commentary at the time. To me, it took all the focus out of the ring, and it was just this commentator where it was all this sarcasm, and you couldn't take anything seriously from him.
Well, I think that was the time, too, where it really got to the point where, you know, morale was so bad and direction was so bad. I think a lot of guys just sort of went out there to amuse themselves, and then Mark might have been to the point where he's just going to do what he wants. I don't know if this was around the time where he was having the you know, the feud with Paige, where he used to make shoot comments on Paige and Kim just because he wanted to. But thankfully, Mark liked me, so more often than not, you know, whatever his comments were would feed into the stuff I was doing, at least, because he'd go pro-Canada and so forth. So, but yeah, the rest of the show, I think a lot of guys just did whatever entertained themselves.
Now, also looking back at this time period, this was about 5 months before the buyout with the World Wrestling Federation. And if you do recall, I mean, around this time period, I'm sure it is somewhat foggy, but I mean, what kind of was morale like at this stage of the game? Because this was the first time we were hearing whispers about a potential sale of WCW. There were a lot of groups that had been rumored to possibly be purchasing the company. I think Vince Russo was just on his way out at this point on the creative side. I mean, was it so much that, I mean, a lot of the top-end guys were at home at this point. Was it just a lot of disorganization, or what was kind of the mood?
Again, I don't remember specifically time frame-wise, but the majority of my time in WCW, it was just, you know, this is a rudderless ship. Let's just try to collect our paychecks, and if we can amuse ourselves, great. Because, you know, no one thought the product had a chance at that point in time, and certainly Vince Russo's booking didn't encourage any other train of thought. So it was really, you know, the top guys just screwed around and did what they wanted. I know no one had the balls to do anything about it. And the rest of us in Midgard knew that no matter how hard we worked, we weren't going to get anywhere else. So we, you know, if you were working with somebody you liked, then you tried to have a good match, and all the other stupidity you tried to ignore and not get too upset about.
What was also the thinking on your part, including Jim Duggan into the match, and you had the handicap dynamic. Obviously, Duggan, at this point, he was about 45 years old at the time, and it just seemed backwards because you guys were ending up building to a pay-per-view the next month, where it would be back to a singles match.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't my idea. I'm assuming it was just, you know, they wanted more gimmicks and something different to do. But I remember watching it last night, how absurd I thought about it, in that of all the people in this match, the one who, you know, needs the extra cardio and a partner to tag in, and I'm sure as hell wasn't me. Mm-hmm. But you've got, you know, poor Bill, who, you know, and I love Bill, but, you know, in a one-on-one, he's certainly the one that's going to need the cardio help rather than me, and then I'm the one that gets to tag in and out, and poor Bill's the one that's got to, you know, stuck up and work my pace as well as tagging in and out and working with Jim. So it certainly wasn't designed to help the people who needed the cardio in the match, that's for sure.
Well, it was quite the event, Halloween Havoc 2000, which it would build to a huge main event, Lance, of Bill Goldberg versus Brian Adams to close out the show. But
I bet you that would have been sweet.
Yeah, it was a tremendous end. And some other classics on this show were a DNA match with Buff Bagwell and David Flair. So thankfully, you didn't have to watch the whole pay-per-view event, because by no means was your match, I thought, the low end of this card.
I'm guessing the highlight of the whole show might have been the nice backdrop I took from Bill in the match.
It was a beautiful backdrop, and say what you will, I did enjoy the ref bump by Scott Armstrong, because I thought it was just so over the top that it was an enjoyable part of the match for myself.
That's right. So, although any match Scott's in, he's one of the best workers in it, so what the hell.
Also, Lance, I know you're well into your fall session right now at the Storm Wrestling Academy, but for those listening that may have aspirations of getting into the ring, how is the 2010 season looking for the school?
I think there's still 3 spots open for the January session, so if you're interested in training with me, drop me an email. You can go to stormwrestlingacademy.com. There's still room to squeeze into the January session. I think May's around half full, and I've got a few people in for September of 2010 as well.
Well, we're just talking about Scott Armstrong there. Do you get a lot of guys that contact you that maybe are looking to just be referees or managers rather than just in-ring workers? Like, I'm sure you still have to go through a lot of the similar training, but are you getting kind of a diversity of what people are looking at their paths coming out of the school?
You get a few people looking into, you know, how to become a ref or how to become a manager. You know, the one downside, though, is, you know, there's so few opportunities for a manager to, you know, even get a crappy indie payday. Because, you know, very few people are going to hire a manager. More often than not, it's, you know, if one of the boys on the show wants his buddy or his girlfriend to valet him, they let them. But actually, you know, getting hired as a manager is so hard that it's not really a huge career option for people.
All right. Well, on that note, thanks again, Lance, for doing this for us, and especially going back and watching the match for us. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, if I had to watch the whole show, you'd have to pay me.
That was Lance Storm, and yes, if he did have to watch this entire pay-per-view, I would have had to have paid him. We go back to a Jeff Jarrett promo, and Jarrett announces that, Sting, you're going to go from a has-been to a never-was. Is that possible, Way? To go from a has-been to a never-was?
Anything is possible in WCW.
Apparently so, including this match with Jeff Jarrett and Sting, where it was the most overbooked match on the entire card, where we had multiple Sting imposters come out during this match. There was a 1989 Sting, a 1990 Sting, a Wolfpack Sting, a black and white Sting. There was a Sting from the rafters who was bald. This just had so much on it. The fake Sting ended up taking a guitar shot. Then Jarrett hit a guitar shot and defeated Sting. They fought all over the building. It wasn't a good match. I was so confused.
At the beginning of this match, they started doing some standard work, and I thought, oh, good, we're going to see a traditional match with a clean finish. Then the fake Stings came out, and in nowhere did they announce that this match would be a no DQ.
Yeah, that was lost in translation.
They just let it go on. But by the time that the Wolfpack Sting came out, which was like the third Sting, I started to enjoy this match because I didn't start watching it as a wrestling match. I was watching it more like Mortal Kombat, like when you get to the final levels and you have to fight yourself before you fight Goro. I was enjoying it for that reason. The fifth Sting drops from the rafters. The real Sting, Scorpion Death, drops him through a table, knocking Shivani off of headset, leaving Stevie Ray as the only man at the commentary table with the headset on, Stevie Ray doing play-by-play.
Train wreck.
He calls the Scorpion Death Drop the Scorpion Deathlock. It was really sad hearing this man do commentary by himself.
Stevie Ray, horrible. As bad as we get on, like, Todd Grisham or Michael Cole, not even in the league of horrible. I would say Stevie Ray was worse than Mike Adamley.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Well,
backstage, Booker T cuts a promo where he was clearly trying to get over the catchphrase of Booyah. So let's hear from that.
Now, first, let's talk about Big Papa Pump, the man who says he deserved the world heavyweight title. Well, let me tell you something, Scott. There's a big difference between deserving the world heavyweight title and just talking about it. See, the fact is this. You want some, just come on down and you can get some. Now, as far as Goldberg goes, I know this man's condition. I see what's going on in the back. And Goldberg, I respect you to the utmost. So what I'm prepared to do here tonight is buy him just a little bit of more time so he can go out there and get his business done. And let's take Chronic clean out of the game. I'm prepared to put this title on the line right here, right now. So Scott Steiner, booyah, and I'm finna get rich.
Then all of a sudden...
Well, let me just comment on that. Like, what? It's like, how can I be as stereotypically black as possible to cater to a white audience? Why would you read lines like that?
I just want to bring up a conversation for Law fans that I had this morning with Jason Agnew. This was sent to me at 8:30 in the morning. In 12.5 hours, I would like to have a bucket of beers in front of me. I responded at 8:40 a.m., absolutely, we're doing it at 9 p.m. His response was,
booyah.
I just thought that ties in with this. So, Booker T.
They're from the same hood, I think, Jason Agnew and Booker T.
Yeah, they're both from,
from Harlem.
From Harlem at 110th Street. Yeah. We then go to Michael Buffer. He says, this next match is scheduled for one fall and is for the World Heavyweight Championship at... A minute where I just stopped and said, you're kidding me. Bill Goldberg and Chronic are going on last. Scott Steiner heard this news, and backstage, they cut to him attacking agent Ricky Santana because Steiner is furious that he's not going on last on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
This was such a horrible promotion, Way.
the vignettes before the matches were cheesy as hell, too. And it's one thing if they were 1996, but this was 2000. This was just months before WWE was doing those Desire videos, that Limp Bizkit video for WrestleMania X7. Meanwhile, WCW was producing the
stuff out of, like, the UWF from 1987.
Stuff comparable to that Maury Povich shit we were talking about from WWE in 1996. Go through the match, John.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say Booker T was sporting a mustache at this time, and it aged him like 10 years. He looked very, very old. Stevie Ray, there was probably a half an ounce of credibility, which he just blew up with the comment, "Tony, what a pay-per-view we've had tonight."
One of the best ever.
Yeah, one of the best ever. Luckily, no one bought this pay-per-view, so they didn't even hear that comment. Steiner put Booker through the announcer's table. The whole story of the match was that Scott Steiner was out of his mind. He attacks fans, he attacks refs, he would attack Stevie Ray. He could not be controlled. And if he can't control himself, how could he ever be champion?
This is a second table spot in two matches.
Oh, that's fine. Why people want to see tables?
But the announcer's table. Stevie Ray even says, "Tony, that's the last table that we have."
That's right. They were cutting back at this point, Wade. They'd lost a lot of money. So much money that they, I don't know why they decided to do a spot in the last match where one of the fake Stings cut through the ring apron to come out from the bottom.
I thought that was cool.
Did you see the tape that they put? They taped the hole up
for
this match.
How else are you going
to
cover up?
Why did he have to come from under the ring if it was going to be such a problem to tape it up? So they taped the fake hole. That looked so lame. It ends with Steiner grabbing a pipe and attacking Booker T. He hung Charles Robinson upside down from the corner, and then he hit Slick Johnson, like, stiff, right in the shoulder with another pipe. And the end of all this was Steiner and Stevie Ray teasing a match at the end, because Stevie Ray was trying to hold himself as Scott Steiner beat the shit out of his brother.
And apparently in this match, you can get DQ'd.
Apparently this one you could, but not the last match. So I was just shaking my head at this because it meant that we'd see another Booker T. Scott Steiner rematch. But then I reminded myself, I will not be watching a rematch between these two. Main event time, Way. Halloween Havoc. God, what a drop off from the Halloween Havoc 1998. That was a bad show, but nothing like this show. Ending with Chronic against Bill Goldberg. The commission clears Bill Goldberg to wrestle 2 minutes before the match. Clearly, Chris Nowinski's book had not been published at this point, because I would not be allowing a man with a concussion from 6 days earlier to begin competing. Brian Clark was a late addition to the Scott Putski Award. Bill Goldberg, out of nowhere, if he loses, he also retires. A spear onto Brian Clark through a table. He pinned Clark in 3 minutes. He did a leapfrog, a spear, a jackhammer, pin Brian Adams, and that's the end of the pay-per-view. And when I say the end of the pay-per-view, 1, 2, 3, arm raised, cut. We're out. This pay-per-view sucked, Way.
This main event was 3.5 minutes. The commentators had no idea what was happening. They didn't know it was an elimination match, and it was a real mess to watch.
I didn't know it was an elimination match.
No, of course. Why would you?
I started watching. It took me 3 attempts to watch this show, Way. Okay. And I came in after the first attempt and I apologized to you.
Yeah, you did.
It was just so bad, Way. Any other notes you have?
Well, just my final thoughts were that the positives of this show.
Oh, Way, please list them.
There was a good opener. I enjoyed the opener. Sting and Jarrett was so over the top that I started to quite enjoy it.
See, I was so far into the pay-per-view at that part that I was too far gone to enjoy anything.
I had split up my viewings to 2 different nights, and I made sure I had quite the enough energy to watch. But as for the negatives, the commentary,
horrible.
I could not say more worse things about. I felt bad for Shivani. Stevie Ray and Mark Madden are both very unsuited for this role. The flow of the pay-per-view was very disjointed, with vignettes just all over the place. A bunch of vignettes that you did not need, that did not carry any information.
No impact on any. You just cut the second the match was over. It was like, why even have it if it means nothing? If the result means nothing, you can't even let the viewer breathe for a second and intake what he just saw.
Absolutely. The stupid stipulations, kickboxing for a commissioner.
That was horrible.
DNA testing, handicap elimination, and impromptu tag matches. There was no need for half the matches on this card. There were 11 matches on this card.
What do you give this out of 10?
I will say I quite enjoyed this on the plunder scale. I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10?
6 out of 10 on the plunder scale. I gave 1998 Halloween Havoc 8 out of 10. And I thought it was actually quite fun to watch this all unfold. It was quite an entertaining slice of Russo era WCW.
I give it a 0.5 out of 10.
Wow.
Because
worse than Heroes of Wrestling?
What did I get? Heroes, I'll take more out of that. This was just... for a company with the resources of WCW, the talent of WCW,
yeah,
how you could even put this together is beyond me.
How could you not...
I don't think a TNA pay-per-view is even... Well, I might be going out on a limb there. But
how could you not enjoy all the humor in this event?
There was none. There was none. Wait. I don't want anyone to get any misconception from me that you should go out and watch this. You should not. Order or watch Halloween Havoc 2000.
I think if you enjoy bad wrestling and enjoy laughing at all the bad things that can happen,
I guess,
to a wrestling company with a lot of money, you should rent this.
We got some feedback way that we didn't get to last week, and also some new ones. The first one, all the way from Ireland, from Patrick McHugh. When I heard you guys were going to review Halloween Havoc 2000, I felt compelled to write in with my own personal experience of this show. At the time, I was on holidays with my family in New York. We arrived on the day of the show, and feeling extremely tired, I just decided to go to bed and watch some TV. I was staying in my aunt's house, and flicking through the stations, I came across Halloween Havoc. Maybe you guys could help me out with this part. I didn't have to ring any number or anything to watch this pay-per-view. I just turned to the station, and it was on. Is this normal? No. Please tell me I didn't add $30 to this lady's bill to watch this piece of shit. If I did, then I would like to apologize now. I was 10 years old at this time, and even at that age, this show offended me greatly. I decided to watch a few clips on YouTube because I'm a sucker for pain. I wish I hadn't. Bagwell and Flair sucked. Honestly, Ric Flair's son was wrestling in a pair of jeans. Sting and Jarrett was so overbooked that my head hurt after watching it the first time. I felt no need to watch this again. The main event was a WWF Heat mid-card squash match that was shorter than most ring entrances I've seen. Never a good sign when the main event of a pay-per-view fits into a six-minute YouTube clip. Again, if my aunt had to pay for this, I'm really sorry. 2 out of 10 for the fact that some stuff, like the wig coming off of Sting, was so bad, it was funny. That was from Patrick in Ireland. Hey, Way, just wanted to thank you for keeping that song in mind and playing it last time. I don't know which song he's referring to.
Who is this?
This is Artyom from Lithuania.
Oh, okay, yeah. Forever Young.
Forever Young, Alphaville. Also, thanks for another great review, because I started watching pro wrestling around 2000, so you and John actually made me download some of those gems. Couldn't find Heroes of Wrestling anywhere, though. It seems even a dump like the internet can't bear to accommodate it. Love you guys, not in a mushy kind of way, but in a rugged, manly way. From Artis Ozolinch in Latvia. We have a lot of international ones. Ireland, Lithuania, and yeah, this is Latvia. I'm a little late, but I'm thankful for SmackDown and Ask Away, a.k.a. Review Away, returning. SmackDown for being the number one wrestling show today with the stars like CM Punk and John Morrison. Blah, blah, blah. If I may suggest a pay-per-view to review, Starrcade 1998. The day when Eric Bischoff defeated the best wrestler of that time, Ric Flair, the master of the Diamond Cutter, Slade the Giant, and the day when the man was robbed, when the streak was ended at 173-0 with the most stupid finish possible. What it was, check it out yourselves if you don't remember that. That's from Artis. And finally, from Turk Ugazo, hey, Poleman and Tinger, Heroes of Wrestling was your best review yet. The pay-per-views keep getting worse. I love it. Some other classics to check out. WCW Uncensored 95, featuring Dustin Rhodes taking on Blacktop Bully in a King of the Road match where they wrestle on the back of a moving semi-truck complete with hay and slop buckets. Best of Saturday Night's main event, where Hulk Hogan appears on the Real American video where he plays guitar in red tights and stands over Mount Rushmore. WCW Starrcade 98, which is getting a lot of votes now, where Scott Hall zaps Goldberg with a cattle prod. And he ends it with, you want to play 21? Well, I got 22. Thanks, guys. Turk.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
So, guys, you can always send your feedback to John, J-O-H-N, at thefightnetwork.com and Way at thefightnetwork.com. And you can join the official Facebook group of Review Away, where we always enjoy your suggestions on shows to review. Next up, Way, we have the 1995 Halloween Havoc, which took place in Detroit, Michigan, and it features man versus man, machine versus machine. If you're intrigued, then you'll want to download Review Away next week. This is one Way I think we'll both enjoy. I hope.
It should be good. I don't mind these shows so much. It gives me something to look forward to, something to laugh at, something to make me...
The matches are short on Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
So that's
good. There are 11 of them crammed into 3 hours.
So That'll be up next week for everyone. Halloween Havoc 1995. Again, join our Facebook group. We always appreciate your feedback. And a song to go out with, Way. We do have Halloween coming up this coming Saturday. Maybe something of the Halloween theme, being that we are doing Halloween Havoc this week and next. What's a good idea?
A Halloween theme song? Well, there's this song by, why are you looking at me?
Like, I don't know. I'm just waiting for you to say something.
Well, there's this song called, that was released a couple years back from, if you're into indie rock at all, especially Canadian indie rock, there's this band called The Unicorns, and the lead singer from The Unicorns, once that band broke up, he did this fundraising song, and he gathered people from all over. Like, we're talking, like, the lead singer from the Arcade Fire, from Sonic Youth, the Carino from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Beck, the dudes from Sloan, and Wolf Parade. He gathered all those people to do a parody of Do They Know It's Christmas, but for Halloween. And this song is called Do They Know It's Halloween.
The fight.
Young boys and ghouls in ghoulish disguise. They cover the skin, conceal their eyes. A great mistake to be held when the ghosts are about. It's Halloween, a time to be on the rest of the world. They don't observe this act which has become our biggest concern.
That feels lost.
We're better off without love than love. somebody tell them.